Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Some of you have probably seen some of the talking head programs on Sunday. The major interview programs are really a very fascinating opportunity for an interaction between the media and major public figures. You're talking here about such shows as This Week with ABC, and you're talking about Meet the Press and Face the Nation. Some of these are the longest-running news programs on television. But it was on Meet the Press on Sunday that Democratic vice presidential nominee Senator Joseph Biden appeared, and he made some statements on abortion that really caught my eye. And I want us to go ahead and listen to what he had to say as we really try to think about what we ought to be talking about today. And what you're going to be hearing right here is Tom Brokaw asking Senator Biden about when human life begins.
If Senator Obama comes to you and says, "When does life begin? Help me out here, Joe, as a Roman Catholic," what would you say to him?
I say, look, I know when it begins for me. It's a personally and private issue. For me as a Roman Catholic, I'm prepared to accept the teachings in my church. But let me tell you, there are an awful lot of people of great confessional faith, Protestants, Jews, Muslims, and others, who have a different view. They believe in God as strongly as I do. They're intensely as religious as I am religious. They believe in their faith and they believe in human life. And they have differing views as to when life. I'm prepared as a matter of faith to accept that life begins at the moment of conception. But that is my judgment. For me to impose that judgment on everyone else who is equally and maybe even more devout than I am, it seems to me is inappropriate in a pluralistic society. And I know you get the pushback. Well, what about fascism? Everybody, you know, are you going to say fascism is all right? Fascism isn't a matter of faith. No decent religious person thinks fascism
but
is a
if
good
you,
idea.
You.
Now, we'll be coming back to that in just a moment. But the point here is that Senator Biden has said that he is absolutely convinced as a Roman Catholic, because it is a matter of faith, that human life begins at conception. But then he turns around and says that politically he defends a woman's right to choose because he says in a pluralistic society, it would be wrong for him to impose his religious belief on others. Now, I want to use one word to describe that position. And that's horrifying, because the net result of this is that we've had a major American public figure say that he believes that millions of Americans are being murdered. Homicide means the killing of a human life. He just said that he believes human life begins at conception. He believes that this homicide is going on, and yet he believes in a pluralistic society we have to allow it to take place. Now, I know that that is a recognizable logic. I want to ask those of you who are listening to this program very clearly, is that a logic you could live with? Now, my guess is that Senator Biden is probably, when he thinks as a Roman Catholic, saying, this is what I believe, and yet when I think as a senator, this is how I vote. But I'm going to suggest to you that that's a horrifying disconnect. And it has horrifying precedents in human history. We're not here to talk about Senator Biden. We're here to talk about the argument. We're not talking about the 2008 election per se. We're talking about the question of abortion and public policy. How can you have a private conviction about murder? That's the question. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You can have a private conviction about many things, but a private conviction about murder is, I believe, absolutely impossible. We'll talk about how this argument came about, what's behind it, and we're really going to take it apart today on the Albert Mohler Program. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation, and that means we invite you to join. You join by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get back to that issue in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news, residents of America's Gulf Coast are once again looking with trepidation to the Gulf, where now Hurricane Ike, currently Category 2 as a storm, is headed into the Gulf after battering Cuba with Category 3 and Category 2 winds. Forecasters are suggesting that the storm, after passing into the Gulf of Mexico, could make landfall in the United States over this coming weekend, probably near the Texas-Louisiana border, and perhaps not far from Houston, Texas. The Associated Press reports that in Louisiana, where thousands remain without power after Hurricane Gustav hit last week, Governor Bobby Jindal urged residents to start stockpiling food, water, batteries, and other supplies. The state of Louisiana is also readying shelters and making plans for trains, buses, and planes in case a coastal evacuation is called later in the week. Now, it's not only the Gulf Coast that's been battered economically. South Florida and the Florida Keys have also been battered. It's the second time in a month that vacationers have left in mass terms from the Florida Keys. It's one of those things that just reminds us how small we are, is it not? These storms are giant. We're looking just at these satellite images of a storm that is several hundred miles wide. It may fill, in terms of its cloud mass, the entire Gulf of Mexico. It is headed with this awesome force, and it is expected to gain force over the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico as it heads somewhere in the Gulf. So add that to your prayer concerns for this week as people on the Gulf Coast are looking to see what happens. Meanwhile, many other people are looking to Europe to see what happens when outside of Geneva, the Large Hadron Collider, that is the world's largest particle collider, will start up. It is intended to explore the tiniest particles on Earth, and according to the Associated Press, it is to come ever closer to reenacting the Big Bang. According to the news reports, the first beams of protons will be fired around the 17-mile tunnel to test the controlling strength of the world's largest superconducting magnets. These magnets are the size of buildings. These superconducting magnets have such force within this 17-mile tunnel that it's really interesting that some of the collisions that will come force could create micro black holes. There are some who believe that these larger black holes, upon which these smaller ones are supposed to be models, could at one point endanger the planet and our galaxy. It's very interesting to look at this. Katie Yerkowitz, spokeswoman for the U.S. contingent on the CERN, that CERN project, said this happens only once in a generation. People are very excited. When you say once in a generation, actually, this has never happened before in terms of human history to have a superconducting set of magnets like this, a super collider, and a 17-mile underground tunnel. That's taking place, supposedly, now scheduled for Wednesday in Switzerland. We'll all be waiting to see what happens with that. At Yeshiva University, the big news is a professor who left 2 years ago as a man and returned last week as a woman. Literature professor Joy Layden, formerly known as Jay Layden, age 47, showed up for her first day of school sporting pink lipstick, a tight purple shirt, and a flirty black skirt. This is according to the New York Post reporting. Rebecca Rosenberg reports that the professor cheerfully strutted through the doors of the Manhattan campus, where she oversees the Writing Center. But it turns out this has led to a lot of controversy on the Jewish campus. Rabbi Moshe Tindler, a senior dean at Yeshiva's rabbinical school and professor of biology and medical ethics, said he's not a woman. He's a male. And I can't continue that conversation. He mentions surgical changes that were taking place. Quote, he's a person who represents a kind of amorality that runs counter to everything Yeshiva University stands for. There is just no leeway in Jewish law for a transsexual. End quote. I appreciate the rabbi's response there. Operating out of an Old Testament base of moral reasoning, there is a clear distinction in the scripture, in the New Testament as well, of course, but this rabbi is looking to the Old Testament, suggesting that it's an impossibility to come up with a category of a transgendered person, because gender is a part of the goodness of God's creation. It's assigned by God, and thus the rabbi says this makes no sense. There is no category for this. His word is, there is no leeway in Jewish law. It will be fascinating to see what comes out of this. It's led to a great deal of controversy there in the Manhattan campus of Yeshiva University, one of the largest Jewish academic institutions in America. And this is another reminder that if this issue has not arrived on your campus or in your community, it one day will. Soothsayers can now practice their craft legally in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. It turns out that this little town in northern New England had in 1966 adopted a law that said that there could be no fortune tellers, clairvoyants, tarot card readers, or anyone else charging to contact spirits. Now, you start looking at this and you realize something is going on here. The something was that the town passed this ordinance in order to avoid fraud, to protect its people from fraud. Now it says that it's not the community government's responsibility to protect people from themselves. Maria Pawlowski, a tarot card reader, said, "When the ordinance was lifted, I actually felt a large weight lifting from my shoulders." She went on to say, "It was very oppressive to have to refrain from something that was as natural to me as breathing." Wow. As for fraud, a senior scholar with the First Amendment Center in Washington said people have the right to believe in these things and to predict the future, to say what they think, and even to charge money for it. The government has no power to determine whether or not these people are committing fraud. You know, I agree that that's not the government's responsibility. But I'll tell you the truth. I'm still amazed there are human beings that believe in this stuff. I'm even more bemused that they'll pay for it. Back with Christian Conversation. In an intelligent frame. This is the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Miller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. You know, there is a legitimate discussion to be had concerning the extent to which some issues can be enacted into public policy. And that's a legitimate debate. But there is no legitimate debate as to whether or not the government will take a side on the issue of human life. That is not up for debate. The law will either allow abortion or it will not allow abortion. It will either allow euthanasia or it will disallow euthanasia. There is no avoidance of this issue on the part of the government. The government cannot, simply because of its responsibility to uphold the law, the government cannot forfeit or dodge the question of the dignity of human life. And especially when it comes to abortion, it has been front and center in this nation's life, especially since 1973 in the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision. And in every election cycle, yet people say, well, we wish we could get beyond that issue. You had, the people coming out in the last couple of weeks saying, look, the culture war is back. Well, this is why it's back. Government makes these decisions. The persons you elect to government become the agents of making these decisions. Elections matter. And the issue of abortion is back front and center. It really emerged in many ways in this election cycle at the Saddleback Civil Forum on the Presidency that was held just a few weeks ago. And Rick Warren, the pastor there at Saddleback, asked both Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain some very clear questions about, for instance, when human life begins. The question was framed there, when does a baby get human rights? And Barack Obama said that that question was above his pay grade. And John McCain said his answer to the question was that the child gets those rights at conception. You had a very clear dichotomy there. And yet, on the Democratic side, you have both Senator Barack Obama and Senator Joe Biden trying to figure out how exactly they can contextualize this. They're clearly in a difficult position. The New York Times reports this morning that when Joe Biden appeared on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday, I'm quoting here from Kate Phillips of the New York Times, Mr. Biden tried to walk the line between the staunch abortion rights advocates in his party and his own religious beliefs. Now, when we're thinking about how one might do that, or how well one might do that, we're no longer really in the realm of hypothetical because Senator Biden answered the question. Let's listen again to Tom Brokaw ask the question, and then let's listen to Senator Biden's answer as he responds to Mr. Brokaw.
If Senator Obama comes to you and says, when does life begin? Help me out here, Joe, as a Roman Catholic. What would you say to him?
I say, look, I know when it begins for me. It's a personally and private issue. For me as a Roman Catholic, I'm prepared to accept the teachings in my church. But let me tell you, there are an awful lot of people of great confessional faith, Protestants, Jews, Muslims, and others, who have a different view. They believe in God as strongly as I do. They're intensely as religious as I am religious. They believe in their faith and they believe in human life. And they have differing views as to when life. I'm prepared as a matter of faith to accept that life begins at the moment of conception. But that is my judgment. For me to impose that judgment on everyone else who is equally and maybe even more devout than I am, it seems to me, is inappropriate in a pluralistic society. And I know you get the pushback. Well, what about fascism? Everybody, you know, are you going to say fascism is all right? Fascism isn't a matter of faith. No decent religious person thinks fascism
but
is a
good idea. But if you...
We'll get back to the continuation of that conversation in just a moment. This line of argument is not new. Former New York Governor Mario Cuomo, back in the 1980s, presented the same kind of argument, saying that he believed that human life began at conception, but that as governor of New York, and as then an expected presidential candidate for the Democratic Party, he felt that it would be improper to impose his views. Well, let's just make the obvious statement that someone's views are imposed in the law. The law did not accidentally get where it is. We should also point out that this was not the choice of the American people. It was rather the imposition of the United States Supreme Court in the Roe v. Wade decision from 1973. But I want to think about the logic here. What you have with Senator Biden is a logic that says, I believe that human life begins at conception, which means that abortion is murder. You can't get around that. I mean, just any legal or moral or philosophical definition of what happens when you willfully take a human life, he's already said he believes it is a human life. If you take that human life, it is homicide. It is murder. Now, you can have a private conviction on any number of issues. You can believe that X number of angels can dance on the head of a pin, if that's what you want to believe. But that does not impinge upon public policy. But when it comes to the question of the sanctity and dignity of every single human life, every person in political office has to come down on one side or the other. The bottom line is that in office, Senator Biden comes down in support of a woman's right to murder. That's what he says he believes it is. He doesn't use the word, but he says he believes it's human life, to commit homicide. But in a pluralistic society, he says it would be wrong to impose his own views. He calls the issue personal and private. I think that's an interesting way to introduce a statement about a matter that inevitably has relevance to public policy. He claims to accept the teachings of his church, and we have to take him at his word. But then he states that other religions hold to other views. He says these believers, quote, believe in God as strongly as I do and are equally religious. We live in a pluralistic society. Thus, it would be wrong to impose one view on others, especially when others may be, quote, equally and even more devout than I, end quote. Now, at this point in the interview, when you heard that question, it's clear that Senator Biden has some idea of the intellectual box he's just put himself into. That's why he comes back and says, you know, there's always the pushback. He says, what about those who say that this would offer fascism? He says, quote, no decent religious person thinks fascism is a good idea, end quote. So I have to ask the senator, is this the new criterion for public policy? It's whatever, quote, a good religious person might think? Tom Brokaw then asked Biden about his support of abortion rights, given what he had just said about his belief that life begins at conception, and the senator replied by saying, I voted against telling everyone else in the country that they have to accept my religiously based view that it's a moment of conception. That's just fascinating. Now, Kate Phillips, I quoted her earlier in the New York Times, she pointed out that Senator Biden was trying to walk the line between the staunch abortion rights advocates and his party and his own religious beliefs. She could continue that by saying that he was trying to clean up somewhat for Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, who in a similar interview had said that she did not know what her church teaches, that the church did not have a firm position on when human life begins. The press is out this morning with a report that her archbishop there in San Francisco is calling for a meeting with her, perhaps to clarify this, a meeting between the bishop and the speaker. Senator Biden says, and we must take him at his word, that he accepts as a matter of faith that human life begins at conception, but he argues that he's perfectly willing to support a woman's right to choose to end that human life. Now, again, I suggest that this is horrifying. The killing of a human life is called homicide. Murder is the willful taking of a human life. The senator has here stated that he believes abortion to be homicide, but he defends a woman's right to kill the unborn human life within her because he would not impose his beliefs about human life and thus about homicide on others. In other words, if we take Senator Biden seriously, he would defer to others who believe otherwise when it comes to the law. I want to ask, how can we live with this? The phone number is 877-893-8255. We got some callers on the line. Callers, hang with me, and right after this break, we're going to get right to what callers have to say about this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, the idea that we supposedly cannot impose our religious views is a significant issue, just given some areas of public policy. That's why, for instance, we don't have laws these days on the books in most places saying that stores have to be closed on Sunday. And that's understandable. Blue laws are a thing of the past, not a thing of the future. But when it comes to defining human life, the law has no choice but to come down on one side or the other. I think it's horrifying to think you can believe in your heart and soul that abortion's murder and then say, yeah, but we have to keep it legal in a pluralistic society. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Back for Intelligent Christian Conversation on the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The question is, can you have a private conviction about murder? I'm going to acknowledge that you may have a private conviction about many things, but when it comes to the question as basic as human life, can you have a private conviction on murder and serve in a public role that has to decide these issues? This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK in Flint, Michigan. Mark's been waiting on the line. Thank you, Mark. What do you think?
The disconnect between personal conviction and public action that Senator Biden seems to be expressing appears to be the same kind of logic that was used by the clergy and the people in Germany during the Holocaust. I think it reflects the same type of thinking, and it's occurring at this time.
Yeah, and let's be clear about that, Mark. That's a very good point, and let's draw the parallels here. In Germany, in the Third Reich, under the Nazi regime, even before the Nazis came to power in the latter part of the Weimar regime, you had a regime of medical ethics that came up that began to define certain human beings as being Lebens und Wertenslebens. That's life unworthy of life. And so beginning with the mentally incapacitated and then going on to those who were less incapacitated, moving on to those who were deformed and debilitated, moving on to those who were gypsies and homosexuals and Jews, the Nazi regime began to define these people as life unworthy of life. And the question is, what if you had been there and alive then? What if you'd been in a position, Mark mentioned pastors, that's true. What if you'd been a pastor or you'd been a politician in Germany? You've got to make a determination in terms of your teaching and your policy as to whether or not there is human life that is unworthy of life. Is it satisfactory to have a private conviction about that? What if you had a member of the German parliament who came in and said, look, I believe that as in accordance with the teachings of my church, that there is no such thing as life unworthy of life, that actually these categories of persons are actually real human beings who should be accorded the dignity and sanctity of real human life. But that's a private conception, and insofar as there's pluralism within this Nazi regime, obviously the people who disagree with me on this, it'd be wrong to impose my values on others. Mark, I want to extend your logic and move backward from the 20th century to the 19th century. In the United States of America, we had a Dred Scott decision handed down by the United States Supreme Court that said that African-American people were less than fully human, less than a full human being. Now, what if you had merely a private conviction that that's wrong? But after all, this is a pluralistic society, and different people have different views. Different people could be equally religious. I mean, Senator Biden's criterion here is, he says, no decent religious person thinks fascism is a good idea. Well, to our horror, a lot of good, decent religious people, according to the standards of the day, believed that African Americans could rightly be understood to be less than human and thus be chattel slaves. Now, we look back at that. Was that merely a category error, or was that great evil? Well, I think anyone with the slightest modicum of moral intelligence has to say that was evil. Well, let's look at how future generations are going to look back at someone who says, I believe abortion is homicide. I believe human life begins at conception. But I don't believe I can impose that view on others. The phone number to join this conversation is 877-893-8255. Mark made an excellent point. It's the kind of point that needs to be made as we think not only about the challenge of interpreting a current politician's statements, but we also think about connecting the dots as to where this kind of worldview inevitably must lead. And again, Senator Biden, to his credit, understood that he put himself in a box here. He understood that he had placed himself in grave difficulty. He is a lawyer by training. He understands rational and logical argument. And that's why he came back and said that that when it comes to fascism, there's no decent human being who would accept that. But you know, that's a very interesting argument in and of itself. Does that mean that what decent religious people think is good is supposed to be made into law, and what no decent religious person thinks is not right should be made into law? Well, I don't think he can live with that either. But that's the criterion he set forth in his argument. You know, folks, looking at this, it's entirely possible that this is an argument that many people will just accept at face value. It's entirely possible that just pragmatically and politically this argument works. Mario Cuomo tried it at the University of Notre Dame in a famous address given back in the 1980s. An entire series of Roman Catholic politicians have tried it since. And the reason why the Catholics are on the line on this is because they have a teaching authority in their church that calls them on it when they violate it. Tragically, there are far too many who would claim to be Protestant and evangelical Christians who might be in a very similar, immoral, and insubstantial position. No one yet to call them on it. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Now, this is a very interesting question, and it's not one that will go away. As a matter of fact, when I'm asked by people in the media, when's the abortion issue going to go away? Well, it will go away only when one of two things happens. It will go away only when there develops either a consensus in this country that abortion is wrong and that there has to be some other way of dealing with the challenge of an unwanted pregnancy, or when there develops a consensus on the other direction that human life in the womb is negligible and not important, and thus it's just like getting rid of any excess tissue. Now, if you do not have a consensus in this country on either one of those polls, then you're going to have conflict. You can say, well, that conflict will never be adjudicated, that it will never be resolved. Well, just think about the issue of slavery. Slavery was so much an issue that divided this country in the 1840s, 50s, and 60s that it led to civil war. It led, even after the Civil War, to a regional distinction and a continuation of the Civil War by political means for about the next 5 or 6 decades. It led then to a civil rights struggle that continued for the next 4 or 5 decades. But just imagine now if you had a politician suggest they'd go back to slavery. It would be impossible to imagine. Just imagine anyone of any influence in this society suggesting that. Why? It's because there is now a consensus, the right consensus, an absolute consensus that slavery was wrong. Chattel slavery was wrong. That treating some human beings as less than human was wrong. There is now no such distinction. So it is wrong to say that there cannot be such a consensus that would develop. The problem is you have to look at this society and wonder which direction this society is going. In other words, which trajectory makes consensus A or consensus B more likely? Is it more likely that we will end up with the consensus that the human life is sacred, and thus there has to be some better way than abortion, and abortion is understood with horror the way that slavery is now understood, or we'll end up, and we have to wonder if this is more likely, in a consensus in which human life has been so defined down in terms of dignity and sanctity that we now think of human life in the womb as irrelevant, morally meaningless. Now, I will tell you this as an absolute word of confidence. If we ever reach that point of that tragic consensus that human life in the womb is morally meaningless, then I guarantee you it won't just be human life in the womb that is considered morally meaningless. It'll be other human life as well. For that consensus to develop, I guarantee you that you'll get to the elderly and the infirm and the expensive. Somebody's list of life that is, well, let's call it what the Germans called it, Lebens und Wertens Lebens, life unworthy of life. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is one of the most pressing issues I can imagine in this news day. And on this program, we are not going to be continually coming back to the politics of the equation. This is the place where we try to frame things in terms of how an intelligent Christian should understand what is beneath the news. The commentators out there are trying to argue as to whether or not this will be an argument that voters will accept. That's not an irrelevant question. I want us to think about what this argument really means, trace the argument back to its roots, and then look forward from the argument to where this would inevitably lead in terms of policy and its development. Let's go back to listen to Senator Biden again speak to this. And in this case, he's coming back after Tom Brokaw has asked him once again how he applies or does not apply his understanding of when human life begins to the question of public policy law in the issue of abortion.
How am I going out and tell you, if you or anyone else, that you must insist upon my view that is based on a matter of faith? And that's the reason I haven't. But then again, I also don't support a lot of other things. I don't support public finance, public funding. I don't, because that flips the burden. That's then telling me I have to accept a different view. This is a matter between a person's God, whether they believe in God, their doctor, and themselves, in what is always a trick. And what we're going to be spending our time doing is making sure that we reduce considerably the amount of abortions that take place by providing the care, the assistance, and the encouragement for people to be able to carry to term and to raise their children.
Okay, let's look at that argument for just a moment. First of all, there's something interesting there. When Senator Biden continues his argument that he does not apply his private religious convictions concerning the fact that human life begins at conception to the law, because he asked the question, how am I going to go out and tell you, if you or anyone else, that you must insist upon my view that it's based on a matter of faith? He says, and that's the reason I haven't. But then he goes on to something very interesting. He says, but then again, I also don't support a lot of other things. I don't support public funding. I don't, because that flips the burden. That's then telling me I have to accept a different view. Now, that's interesting. It's interesting for a number of reasons. Just to give Senator Biden credit, there is a certain logic to what he says there. But to point to the obvious, he is the vice presidential nominee of a ticket headed by Barack Obama, who does believe in public funding of abortions. And he is the vice presidential nominee of a party that adopted a platform at the same convention in which he was nominated that publicly calls for a public funding of abortion. So we got a problem there in terms of what the ticket represents, but in terms of at least how Senator Biden works this out in terms of his understanding of his public role, there's a distinction. He goes on and says something else. He says, this is a matter between a person's God, however they believe in God, their doctor and themselves, in what is always a, well, he doesn't go on and continue that thought. I assume, and let me be clear here, I'm not reading his mind, but I assume the logic would be here, it's a private religious decision. I don't want to go back and say here, he says this is a matter between a person's God, however they believe in God, their doctor, and themselves. Well, again, let's just take that argument. It's between a woman's doctor and themselves and a person's God, it says. Well, I just want to point out that there is a limited application of that argument. You can't have that argument on very many issues, can you? You can't have, for instance, infanticide that way. You know, what if you have a severely handicapped child? In Europe, there are plenty of doctors who would say it would be better that that child is not alive. If it's a private decision between an individual, an individual's God, and an individual's doctor, you can have all kinds of horrific things happen. Euthanasia is perhaps the first thing that would come to mind, but the parade of horribles on this one is very long and very horrifying. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is the place for Christian conversation with more light than heat on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. We're always glad to hear from you. If you can call the program, by all means, call us. Otherwise, you can always write us at mail@albertmiller.com or go to albertmiller.com. You can find the article I posted today on this argument as to whether you can have a private conviction on the murder, and you can always hit the mail button and write us there. I want to get to a couple of mails we've received even during the program. One listener wrote in to say this, how do the proponents of abortion get around the intensely painful method that is imposed upon the baby? Well, let me just point out that one reason why you know this argument is skirting the issue is that it deals with the woman rather than with the baby in most things. For instance, look at the Democratic platform or look at the way pro-choice or pro-abortion advocates frame the issue. It's a woman's right to choose. If they ever allowed the focus to be on the baby, that's where the problem begins for their argument, both rationally and emotionally. And that's why, for instance, the development of these sophisticated ultrasound technologies, I put one of the frames up on my my website this morning. That's why this has been so powerful for the pro-life movement. What you see with your eyes, you can't deny. Once you focus on the baby, the entire equation gets changed. Leela, thank you so much for your question and comment sent in there. We also heard from another reader who said concerning the issue of abortion and the conversation today that this is a demonstration of double-mindedness, that indeed what you have here is a very clear sign that people who try to hold to this position are biblically defined as double-minded. Now, that's a very interesting and also appropriate argument. It's a reminder to us that being double-minded can be a continuous problem and one that we have to watch at all times. I always appreciate hearing from you, and to the listeners who wrote in during the program today, thank you. It's good to be able to get your understandings here on the air. And when you start looking, by the way, at the issue of abortion, one of the things we must not do is assume that this is a question for moral specialists. The dignity of human life is not only a question that no politician can avoid, it's a question that no morally accountable human being as a society, as a citizen of this society, can avoid. Because we elect people to office, and because we have the opportunity to be stewards of a vote, because we have our own influence in public policy, this is not a matter left to the specialists, to the politicians, to the academics, to the lawyers, and to the elites. This is an issue for every single informed voter. By our vote, we are taking a stand one way or the other on various issues, and one of those issues, unavoidably, is the sanctity and dignity of human life. We'll be following these issues with you. Much to come in weeks ahead. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for joining me on the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.